I've got the spots, the sickness. There's the twins in my brain.
Welcome to today's episode of the What's Under the Hood podcast. Today we have Johannes Kulstedt as a guest. Only 19 years old, but he has already made quite a debut in pro races as a first year under 23 with his biggest performance, the last stage in the Tour of the Alps this year between big names who were training for the Giro. Welcome, Johannes.
Thanks a lot. It's nice to have a chat with you. Yeah.
Maybe we can start from the beginning, where it all started. How did you get into cycling? I know you have like a whole family in cycling, so I guess that that helped a bit.
Yeah, of course. I have three bigger brothers who have who are pro or have been pro. So of course that's kind of my way in. But yeah, my biggest brother, he started cycling when he was 16, and then my father had cycled a bit before, but we weren't like really a cycling family like from we were born. But then it just like the ball just went rolling, and then my second brother started, and then third, and then when I was like 14-15 I raced some few races. But then when I was 16 and COVID started, then it started like really started, because then I had three brothers cycling full time, and also my my father is really interested in cycling, so yeah, it was really natural for me to get into cycling when COVID started, and it wasn't like normal training with my teammates in the sports I did. But yeah, it's now I'm really happy with my choice.
Well, I get that if you look back on what you did already. The start of your career, the first year as a junior, you only rode small Norwegian races, I think. But I think you already had the ability there to race in like higher level races internationally, but you didn't do that yet. So is there a thought process behind that, or?
I did like in the first part of 2021. It wasn't like in Norway. I don't think it was many races because of COVID in the junior races, but also in Norway it was like, yeah, it was pretty strict. So we were just in Norway, and then I raced the Tour de Fjell, the next Tour de Fjell. So it's like the biggest race in Norway, where I finished fourth. And then I actually rode the Peace Race, and I did the Gilles de Lunigiana. So I did some races, but yeah, the Peace Race didn't go like, it was really new to me to race like in this hard, like when I see it now, I was too like scared and I wasn't confident enough in myself. But it's hard when you're first year junior, and the two last seasons, or like all my seasons some of a cyclist, was COVID, so I didn't race much. So I had it didn't go really well, but my teammate Per Sandhagen has won, so that was nice from the team. And then in Lunigiana, actually, I won the youth jersey in Lunigiana as a first year junior, so I could cycling, but I wasn't like it wasn't many races. It was first year after, so yeah. But of course, I had a nice matching, but I didn't race too much in the. Outside Norway, I think I had maybe 20 race days that year.
Yeah, it was very tough, I think, in the COVID times, because I forgot about that for a second. Because you want to prove yourself to bigger teams, but at the same time, you can't race because of COVID. Yeah, how was that?
For me, it was okay, because I was so new to cycling. I was like, before I turned 16, I had maybe raced, I don't know, 10-15 races. So I haven't been like, I wasn't like the kid who started training and cycling races from I was 10 years old and do that all the year. I was like, yeah, I was in some races, but I think I had like 2-3 race days every year. Just a home race I did from I was like 12 to 14-15, and then I started racing after that. So for me, it was actually just kind of nice, because then I had time to just train and yeah, of course it would have been nice to race, but yeah, for me it didn't really matter because I didn't really think about like I'm going to prove myself, because I didn't really have anything to prove, because I was like, I was not like in the top spot at that point. But then after COVID I was like, yeah, okay, I'm getting there. So of course the second year junior, that was a bit different than the first year, because in the first year it was just like, yeah, I just had to get stronger.
Your second year junior started off pretty insane, like in Morbihan podium, Pays de Vaux podium, yeah. And those are, yeah, two of the biggest and toughest junior races there are. So yeah, but after that, the results were less good. Is there any explanation for that in 2022 or?
Yeah, of course we those races was really good, but also those races like Pays de Vaux suited me really well, because it was like, if you see the top 10, it's like it's only the best ones. It was like really just like, yeah, everybody's just going full gas and then we see who win. And also, of course, it's a bit luck if you get the right move. But yeah, after that, I had the Tour of the Val Romer. I got COVID in Saarland. I was like pretty good the first days. I was thinking like, okay, Saarland, I'm going to win, because on the second stage, I went in a breakaway with not too many GC guys. But then I started feeling not too good and I did a really poor TT. And then, yeah, I got COVID in Saarland. And then I was sick for 2 weeks. I lost the Nationals. And then I was back at the Europeans. Europeans was okay. Jürgen came second. So we were, of course, really happy for the Federation. And then in Val d'Isère, I had a pretty big crash on the second last stage. So I had a lot of problem with my back after that. So that race went shit. And then in Uberland as well, I crashed pretty hard on the third stage. And you know, when for me it was like that year, we were two really strong guys from Norway with me and Jørgen Nordhagen. So it was like in junior races, it's so much bingo. You're just on the first day, it's all about just getting in the right move, and then after that, then we will decide who we ride for. And in Lublin, Jürgen was in the right move, so then we rode for him as well. In the World Championship, then I crashed and I had no chance, because I hit the same spot as I did in Val d'Isère. So it was just, I had really no chance to get back. I was just really suffering to just sit on the bike, and then I was taken out like one lap before the finish. So yeah, like after Pays de Vaux, the season was shit, but still, it was, I showed my potential, and also I was happy with all the races I did. It was a nice season, even though it was a lot of pain after crashes.
Yes, if you look at the results after Pays de Vaux, it doesn't look that impressive, but if you tell everything what you had to go through, it makes it very impressive that you're even in the shape to do a race. So yeah, there's also always a story behind those results.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like, after the worst, I did Philippe Chilval, because that was on the last stage. It was called La Redoute, and I was like, okay, now I will really show how good I am, because I had like so much trouble in the last like half year. And then when we came in the bottom of La Redoute, my gear stopped working. So I was locked on the big, and then I had to change bike, lost 3 minutes. So that's it. And then the season was over. So yeah.
Yeah, that's insane bad luck all packed in one part of season. Jeez. I think that's also part of the reason that a lot of people, including myself, didn't expect what you did this year. And like, I knew your name in a race like Tour of the Alps with good names, like almost all World Tour teams were there, I think, doing a performance like that. Did you yeah, did you have that expectation yourself, or was it also a surprise for you?
I wouldn't say it was like that surprise, but at the same time, it was like when I was sitting like two places behind Tao Gegenhardt and Jaron Thomas, I was like, wow, this is crazy. 3 years ago, I was like, or even 1 year ago, I was just like on the ice playing with my friend on like just, yeah, just joking around. And then 1 year later, I'm riding with the best, of course, not against the best because I'm not one of the best yet. But yeah, it was just really mental. But at the same time, my team knew what I could do. I have good test results. And yeah, of course, when you're going to Tour of the Alps and the team has me as the vice captain, they believe in me, even though it was my first pro race. So I was like, yeah, I can do well. But of course, 14th in GC and also the last stage, I was a bit overwhelming, but still, it was like I had I believed in myself, but yeah, of course, that was crazy.
Yes, I was looking at the pro cycling stats rankings for the 19-year-olds, and yeah, you are fourth behind Morgado, Pellizzari, and Tarly. that's nice names to be behind.
Yeah,
so it's. Yeah, we were talking before the pod, and I still feel young. I'm from 2003, but you're even a year younger. So I really can't comprehend how you can race against guys like, as you were saying, Geraint Thomas, Tao Gegenhardt, and you can compete in races from that level. It's just, yeah, so crazy. And the step from juniors to U23, that's already a big one. Like Emil Herzog this year struggled a lot with stepping up to under 23, and you stepped up to elites without problems. So yeah, like now the expectations for next year, do you dare to make goals? Do you have bigger expectations now? How much do you think you can grow?
I mean, if I can grow as much as I did into this season, that would be pretty awesome, because then of course I will take another big step. But yeah, I don't set like result goal, but I set like what's goals for myself, like how much I can improve from last year, like in 60 minutes, in 10 minutes, 5 minutes. But in results, it's pretty hard because this year, since I will go pro next year, then yeah, all of my races will be harder. So of course, it's like if I'm sitting next to Vingegaard in one race, of course I can beat him. So it's like I can't set a goal of like winning that race or that race, because you have to see the start line first. Like, for example, when I was going to Alpizzato, we were thinking like, yeah, this is a race, I can win this. And then we saw the start list, and then Van Aert and Oscar only was there, and he was like, nah, I think a podium would be great. So no, I'm not like, I'm not really focused on the results. I'm more like the same football that you have to see on the performance. It's really like, boring to say, but that's how it is. I'm only 19, so I have the time, and also my team take time on me. So yeah, it's just about getting better, because yeah, I can't be the best ones next year or in 2 years anyway. So you have to take step by step.
Talking about the Alpizer Tour, you finished behind only on Van Aertveld. If you, like you say, look into the competition, only was going head to head with Vingegaard in the Tour of Croatia in 2022. Lennart van Aertveld almost won a Vuelta stage, and those are the two guys you finished behind. So yeah, that says a lot more than only looking at it and seeing the third spot. Like you say, the stories behind the other riders, how good they are.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, I think you can take, I don't know, I haven't seen the results earlier, but I think you can take almost any other years in Alpizzato, and it's not even close to the level of Van Aertveld and Oscar only, because they are like, yeah, they are young, but they are like proven top world tour riders. So, you can't like just say, okay, this is a 2-2 race, I can win, or this is a 1-1 race, I can win, this is a 1-pro race, I can win, because it's, yeah, the start list is so completely different from race to race. So yeah, of course, the third place behind those guys, that was really cool, since I also got to ride so much against them, and also they're really nice guys.
That's a mistake a lot of people make, I think, because like I remember the Tour of Norway 2022, Evenepoel, Vine, they did crazy performance there, and nobody believed the watts per kilo because it was too high. It was a low level race, so nobody believed it. But all the guys from the top five proved that those watts were real indeed. Like some races later, like Evenepoel literally won the Vuelta that year. So yeah, people focus too much on the level of races. Indeed, I think the same. Then the Ventoux challenge. After the Alpe d'Huez tour, you finished 11th there, if I recall correctly, and also a very high level race. If you just look at the names there, even higher level than Alpe d'Huez, I think. How did you experience that one?
Oh, it was. That was really cool because, of course, Mont Ventoux is one of the races I've really now, like, one of the climbs I'm really, like, grown up with. I haven't watched a lot of cycling when I was young. I've just watched Tour de France. And, of course, I've seen Mont Ventoux many times. And maybe the best memory I have is when Froome started running. So, yeah, to ride Mont Ventoux, that was really crazy. And also, like, the level there was insane high, but I was really happy with my performance there. It's high altitude, and I've never been before Mont Ventoux. I've never been so high before, so that was a new experience. I mean, in Norway it's a lot of climb, but it's not a lot of high altitude climbs, so yeah, that was a new experience. So I was really happy with that. At the same time, it's like I was only, I think I was 30 seconds behind, and I saw the front group of like 8-9 people right in front of me all the time while I was pushing behind. So it was like, I felt like I was really close to be even better because I have a pretty okay sprint after like a climb. So I feel like I could have done better, but at the same time, it was a nice performance and a really cool experience to ride that mountain.
That surprises me to hear that, to be honest, because if you say first time at that altitude and you already finished 11th, and then you could have even finished better. Yeah, that's crazy. And then you did the Route d'Occitanie after. But that wasn't a race suited to your profile, I think.
It was okay. It was a hard stage on the third stage, but the rest was like it wasn't like completely sprint stages, but it was like medium sprint stages, and it was going really slow. So it ended in a sprint all the other days, but I was lucky enough. I have a nice at the school I went to, it was really nice, so I could skip exam to race. But then on the last stage, I crashed and I broke my ankle or two bones in my ankle and three ribs. So that race ended pretty hard for me. That was a mixed feeling after that race. But yeah, the race in itself was really nice, but yeah, the results not that good. And also the crash was pretty hard.
And I recall a tweet from your dad saying that you just kept on training with three broken ribs or broken ankle and everything. I remember reading that, and I was like how? Because my dad had two broken ribs at the same time, and he was like 4 weeks in the couch, and you just kept on training with an extra broken ankle.
Yeah, it was I have to say that was extremely painful. I struggled a lot for the first weeks. It was like the first 2-3 days, it was just like, I've never experienced anything like that, but because it's like, you just move. I've never broken anything before. So I, like when you're just moving around, it's like every movement is like absolutely horrendous. So, but then after 4 or 5 days, it started feeling a little better. It was still like really painful to breathe, but it was like not too bad. So I started training on the roller after 5 days. My ankle was like, I was pretty lucky with where it was broken, because it was like one on the side and then one on the top. And because of the cycling shoe is so stiff, then it's like okay to ride with it. Of course, I feel it, but riding with it was okay. I couldn't walk normal. I could just walk on one of my foot, but cycling was actually okay. So yeah, I had the goal in CB Tour, and that was only like 2 weeks away. So it was like, I have to train for that. So I was like just training, even though, yeah, of course it was painful, but it was like, it was okay. I mean, the ribs were like, I could still feel the pain in the CB Tour. So it was like still affecting my performance, but it wasn't too bad. So, but yeah, after 3-4 weeks, it was okay. But yeah, that period, I'm a bit proud of myself that I could do it, because yeah, it was not easy to train with that, of course.
You deserve to be proud for yourself, but if my maths are right, Sibiu was only 2 weeks after that crash. So you rode Sibiu with your broken ribs and broken ankle.
Yeah, we decided like 3 days before Sibiu that, yeah, okay, I can go, because I had a lot of great, I think it's called therapist or something. No, like not mentally, but just I got a lot of help with my foot. So the foot was like okay. And then the ribs were just like, I wouldn't make it any worse with riding. It was just like how bad it was for myself. And I had a small interval test some days before, and it was like, I was not at my best, of course, but it was good enough to like, yeah, I can do a good job in Sibiu. So yeah. Then we just went for it.
Wasn't there like a risk? Like if your rib is broken, you can puncture your lung, or with your foot that it cracks more or something?
But the foot was not really any problem. That was just like normal. But of course the ribs were, I don't know, but I think like if you hit it wrong, then you hit it wrong anyway. I mean, of course, but it was a really like, it was not heavy broken. It was like really, really fine, like fine broken. So the ribs were like on a fine place. It wasn't like any wrong with that. So the doctor was like, yeah, this is, if I fall, then it's still no problem. It's, yeah, of course it can break again, but you can do that anyway.
That was a crazy one. I'm looking at your CBU watts now, but I don't know your exact weight, because your Strava and Pro Cycling says there's a difference between them. So if you want to share that, of course.
Yeah, of course. I'm not the person who cares too much. I'm not weighing myself every day, but actually today, luckily, I've done it because I've having we're just like checking if I'm getting enough food in when I'm training. So I'm 60.2 kilos, and I'm like switching between 59 to 61 ish. So I think Pro Cycling stats is 58, and that's a bit too less. Yeah.
So you did 5.3 watts per kilo on altitude, with 3 broken ribs and a broken ankle. Yeah. That's massive respect. Jesus Christ. But yeah, then you also had to do a prologue. Not a prologue, but like a short TT to end Sibiu. That had to hurt like a motherfucker.
That was horrendous. The first 3 days was like, yeah, it was okay. The roads were so smooth. And also it was like, it was not too like VO2 max. So I wouldn't say the performance there was because of the pain. That was more like because my shape wasn't better. So yeah, that was no problem. But on the last stage, we had the cobblestone. It was like 30 corners. It was crazy course. Personally, I think it was pretty cool because it was like just something else. But yeah, it was crazy. And Yeah, those 4 minutes, that was absolutely horrible. That was I think I did like 280 watts because I had no chance of pushing when because I couldn't really breathe because of the cobblestone. But I got through it, and I don't think I lost any GC position. So for me, it was no problem after all.
That's pretty crazy that you didn't lose a position that high up in GC, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then after Sibiu, you did Alsak, but you DNS'd after the second stage, and the second stage you also finished way back. So I guess that also something happened there.
Yeah, it was really hectic that day because it was pretty much windy, but at the same time it was like not enough, so the bunch didn't split. So with I think it was 30-40 k to go, then almost like one third of the peloton went down, and it was me and another first year senior, Artem Smith, who got worst fall. I think he then after that day. And I had to stitch up in my knee. So I had 13 stitches in my knee. So it was, I didn't know it at that point because the doctors there were really good. So they got to fix me up while I was laying down on the road. So I went to the finish line without the wounds open because they had something on it. And then I went to the medic van, and I didn't know I had the wound in my foot, so I showed them, and it was like, oof, that's not possible to ride with because it was like just 2 points who were just opening my knee because of the fall. So it was like, yeah, I wanted to race the day after, of course, because it was La Planche de Belfi, so that was a really nice climb for me. But I had no chance of moving it the day after, so that's why I couldn't start.
How long were you off the bike after that crash?
4 days, and then it was like I had a lot of talks with the doctor, and it was like the stitch was luckily like placed a spot where it was like a bit on the side, so it wasn't like completely in the middle, so it was possible to ride with. It was just a bit painful, but the stitch wouldn't open. So I could ride with it just so if the pain was not too bad. So I think it was on the fourth day I rode 2 hours with my dad. And then I started training fully after 6-7 days. And then I took the stitches out after 16-17 days. So it was like 10 days there where I couldn't like push really hard, but I could train like zone one and zone two.
It's been a month after that crash. You rode Tour de l'Avenir, the highest level, easily the highest level under 23 race that there is, and you finished top 10. So, that's, I think, your preparation was everything but perfect for that race. And I think you can agree that with a better preparation, you would have finished up even higher in the GC.
Yeah, I think so. I do that. Before the race, we were, of course, with the Sonne Mittels as well. We were thinking we're going to win this race. But he crashed and I crashed on the same day, and also the day after, our whole team went down in a massive crash. I mean, L'Avenir was just, it's a really cool race, but at the same time, it's like the place where everybody wants to shine. So it's extremely hectic and, I would say a bit dangerous. So, we crashed pretty. I was the luckiest one of the team. I was the guy who landed the softest. So, I was lucky that time. But, the rest of the team was like, we were a bit mentally down. And then on the TT, we lost a lot of time when it was only me that was 100%, and I'm not a TT beast, so that was not too good for us. And also, of course, the preparation in front of the race was not really good. I think I had maybe one session where I was able to push over threshold for 5 weeks there. So I would say Davenir was pretty good, like if I see the preparation, but of course I would like to do it, or I would have liked to done it much better, but yeah, the level there was crazy high when you see the what performance there, like on Col de la Luz. I don't remember like what, I think it was maybe 5.8 watt per kilo from Isaac del Toro on like 60 minutes on altitude, and that's, it's not of course Vingegaard level, but that's really high vertical level. So yeah, it's like a combination of, we thought maybe the level was not as high, and also my preparation was not good enough. So ninth is good.
I remember, but from as I'm looking at it now, 62 minutes at 5.7 watts per kilo for Isaac de Toro, but it, as you say, Col de la Luz is crazy altitude. So at sea level, that's probably like over 6 watts per kilo, I think, because the difference is so big.
So I mean, if I like could have like for me to have a chance against that I had to be on my best, and I wasn't. So then it's like, I mean, top 10, it's good.
What's the best you ever pushed for an hour?
I think it's 3:40 around that. I don't think my 60 minutes is that good. It might actually be from Col de la Luz, but I have 30 minutes for 3:75. So that's probably the best. So for if like when I'm racing, of course I'm lighter than 59 kilos, so I have something to go on. But yeah, I don't think I could have matched Isaac del Toro that day anyway. So yeah, I would not win.
if I do 375 watts divided by 58, I get 6.5 watts per kilo for 30 minutes.
That's
crazy. I'm really impressed by I knew you had to endure a lot of bad luck the last 2 years, but I didn't know it was that much. Like, I don't understand how you can finish top 10 in Avenir. A normal cyclist has to be on his absolute best to do that, and you crash like 2 times. You broke bone. You break bones. You have a big cabin in your knee or your foot, and you still finish top 10 in Avenir. That's so impressive, to be honest.
Of course, it was really cool to have raced Avenir. It was, I mean, you meet the best of the best, besides the best, because of course the best ones are Ayuso and Evenepoel and all the guys, and Carlos Rodriguez. You have to remember that Carlos Rodriguez and Ayuso, they are, or Sian Uthelbux, they are allowed to race L'Avenir in the age. So of course it's like, it's another step from L'Avenir to the World Tour, because the best ones at the U23 aren't racing L'Avenir, but still it's like, it's the best after the two, three best guys. So of course the level is crazy high, so you have to be really good to be at the best there.
You have a point this year where you had the feeling that you were in top shape, like where everything went right in a race. Did you have that feeling for?
I have like maybe the best feeling. I mean, everything went wrong, but the best feeling was maybe actually Lilla Megepe. There I was, I think I had 365 watts for 25 minutes. That's like one of the best performances I had. And I didn't go like completely full gas because I had no chance in winning. I finished in second because it was so far from the front. Of course, I pushed really hard, but I mean, it's a big difference from like going like you can't breathe, and also like okay, I have something to work on. But yeah, there I had the feeling where my body was really well, and also in, I would say actually Alpisato there I was also really good. I did my 5 minute peak on the first stage, trying to bridge up to Oscar only when he attacked in the bottom of a climb, and I did the climb like 7 seconds slower than him, and I did 5 minute peak with like 15 watts.
How much did you push then on those 5 minutes?
Four. I think 4:40. It was like four,
seven and a half.
Yeah, probably around that. I think it was four. I don't remember, but I remember it was like, oh, this is much better than I've ever done before.
Yeah, I have like a sort of benchmark in my head. That's 8 watts per kilo on 5 minutes. That's like God level. And you're 19 and you're only 0.5 watts per kilo off that, and it's in a race, not even a fresh effort. So super impressive. And then after I don't know how to pronounce it, that good to be honest, with Lillehammer GP, is that right?
Yeah.
You did Tour of Luxembourg. I of course looked into the odds of that, and I remember that the level there was very high. Did you also experience it that way?
Yeah, in Luxembourg it was crazy. It was in Alps there were the top guys. I mean the I would say the 15 best was extremely good, and I wouldn't, like, even though I finished 14, I wouldn't like place myself in the top 15 because I went in the break the last day and gained some spots there. So I wasn't like one of the 15 best, but the 15 best there was crazy good. And then in the Luxembourg, I would say the 40 guys, the 40 best there was also crazy good. So it was like another step, because for me, it felt like Luxembourg was, it was not a virtual race, but it was a virtual race level. With all the, like, so stacked up field with so much great teams, and like UAE, who had like Hilshi, McNulty, Josh Hartner, Ulissi, it was extremely high. And so, I felt the level there was crazy. And when I was domestique for the Tobias Johansson, then for me, it was a crazy experience to be in that race.
He won the last stage, I think, and I remember seeing that the power file, and that was crazy.
Yeah,
right. Tobias Johannessen, I think it's an interesting name to talk about for a bit too. He almost stopped cycling at the beginning of this year due to a knee injury, if I recall correctly, and then a couple months later he was going pretty good again. I think it was in Catalonia or Basque country, and then he rode pretty good Liège, Bastogne-Liège, and then he almost won a stage in the Tour. He would have won from the breakaway if Pogacar and Vingegaard didn't overtake him. So how do you look up to a guy like Tobias Johansson?
I mean, of course he's like a guy, of course I look up to him. He's I haven't like grown up with him, so I can't say he's like an idol like some other athletes are, but he's of course one I really enjoy like watching racing and also race with, because he's just the twins. Those are like just the best guys. They're so nice and they're so friendly, and they're like talking to everybody like they're as good as them. They're not like any cocky or anything like that. They're just so amazing. But for me to race with him on the same team, that's really cool. Also with him, like, I wouldn't say I haven't had that much bad luck. I've just been on the wrong place at the wrong time. So that's because of my, like, that has made me crash. But Tobias and Anders has been really, they have had bad luck with all the injuries, because I haven't had like any injuries of that kind. So I feel like that's a big difference. And so for me to come back from my injuries is much more easy than for them to come back from those injuries. So yeah, that's just amazing to see how they can do so well after that. Like Tobias in Tour de France is just, I remember when I finished first stage in Sibiu and the press wanted to talk with Anders and he didn't understand why. And it was because Tobias finished third in the Tour de Malais stage behind Pogacar and Vingegaard. So that just showed like his top level, and also that UNOX, of course, we aren't the biggest team, but we're getting there.
First about the Tour de France stage, like for a moment, it even looked like Tobias was going to hang on to Pogacar and Vingegaard. Like he, after a whole day in the breakaway, he held on for a pretty long time to those two. So yeah, that's crazy. And like you say, how quickly he returns after his injury, like at the end of Algarve, he had to pull out due to his knee playing up again, and then only 1 month later in the last stage of Catalunya he already finished 25th at the May. Doesn't sound that crazy, but it was like a very hard stage that one of the biggest talents in cycling, I think, Tobias.
Yeah, he's of course a crazy talent also. I mean, he's not the youngest anymore since he's turning 25 next year, but he's still pretty young, like even younger than that age, because he's not done road cycling for that long, and he also have all the problems he have had. So I think like he has of course a potential that's extremely big if he can just get more training and more racing, then I think we will see even more from him.
Are there plans to go with for GC with Tobias that you know of?
Oh, I don't think so next year, but maybe in the future. I think next year, if we get Tour de France again, I think one stage win is of course the main target, and probably the easiest or the most, not the less difficult winning is to get in the break and not trying to get top 10 in the GC. I mean, I think every cyclist would have switched the top 10 in GC with a win. I think like a win is just like so big.
And talking about UNOX a bit more, you already said how good the team is. You also seem to have a lot of trust in the team, because you signed a contract until 2027. So that's for 4 years after. Yeah, that's for 4 years. First pro contract. So that's pretty crazy to be offered that for the first place. But also, you have to trust the team a lot to sign for 4 years.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, I've known the team for a long time. I mean, my biggest brother Christian, he was on the team when they started in 2017. Right? Yeah, I might be wrong, but I think it was then. So I've like seen the team grow even before I started cycling myself, and I mean, I know the guys who are like steering the team. So I have a lot of trust in Jens and Kurt and Stig and the rest of the guys, and it's just really nice to can talk your mother language on the road and just like it just feels like home to be in the team. It's all the guys are like of course it's silly to say, but it's like a family, of course, when you're only Norwegian and Danish people. I mean, Norway and Denmark, they haven't the same language, but it's almost the same. So it's it's just magic to be in the team, and everything about the team, the setup, equipment, plants, is just starting to get so big. So for me, it was pretty easy to say, let's go. We will do this together.
It's talking about equipment, like even the TT material is top level at UNOX. Yeah, they have watt shop parts, so you can also get the if like We talked about Tobias. If Tobias is going for a GC and a tour in a couple of years, he is able to get a custom TT bars and everything, I think.
Yeah, he already have the best watch up. And also we have extremely fast suits from B-Racer. So, I mean, you can't blame the equipment on Unox with the TT. Of course, it's faster bikes. I mean, I think everybody knows that the Stadvelo is crazy fast and probably the Specialized and Pinarello as well. I mean, of course, Tarling, Remco and Wout and Ganna is the strongest as well. But of course, the equipment is really important. So you can't say anything else than that those bikes are really fast. But yeah, I think our bike and everything with our equipment is also really nice. I mean, Söden, he won against Matti van der Poel in Belgium. So of course it's fast. I mean, he's a machine, but at the same time, the equipment has to be fast as well.
Yeah, because yeah, you can push the biggest watts you want. If your equipment isn't good, you are not winning against Van der Poel, as you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
This year, Unimix already had a lot of very good riders. The next year, I looked at the roster, like I knew every name, but if you see them underneath each other, it's such a crazy roster. If you read the names, Kort, Lekkensund, Christophe, Tobias Johannessen, Tiller, Weerskild, Brugaard. Yeah, that's World Tour worthy.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, we lost some guys, but it would be nice to keep. But at the same time, the guys we got is just, yeah, to have Kort Nielsen in is just, that's another big step for us. And I mean, Andreas as well. That's for me. I remember him from I was 13, 14 years. So it's going to be just awesome to race with him. And the rest of the guys who has came into the team this year as well. It's another big step.
Magnificent. Only just top 10 to the Giro this year. So yeah, they wore the pink jersey. Also, I don't know how well you know Marcus Wiga, but that's a guy I find very interesting because he has the potential to be top 10 the World Championships in Leuven, I think, which were the hardest World Championships the last 20 years or something. The ones that they were bonkers. But he had a lot of bad luck the last year. Do you know him pretty well? Or?
No, not really. I can't say that. He's from Stavanger and I'm from Oslo. So we haven't had, like, we're not from, like, the same the same place. So I know him, but I'm not, like, I know Andreas and Jonas Wiedeberg much better because they're they're not coming from the same place, but they're living in the same place and they went to the same school as me. So I have a closer bond to them, but yeah, it's going to be really cool to see Marcus race with Unox again because he was so strong when he was with us in 2021.
Yeah, so I hope he's a very friendly guy because he always responds to my DMs. So yeah, it would be amazing if Unox get him back on the rails for 2024 because he has a lot of potential and potential to compete in the biggest classics with the best riders even, I think. So
I think the classic roster we have now with Tille and Christophe and Kort and Marcus and all the other guys, that's maybe the strongest points of our team because that Flandern and Loubet team is going to be really good.
It's going to be an insane roster indeed. Also, Tiller is also such a crazy guy. Like, I know I was writing a data analysis about him earlier this year, and I needed this weight. It was for, I don't recall which race it was, but and I needed this weight, so I sent him a DM, and he immediately responded. So also a very friendly guy, and he's like 1.82 meters, and he weighs 83 kilos. So that's just a block of muscles on a bike. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's so massive. It's I'm not going to go for a fight with him.
Just every when you won Dwars door Hageland, you won it this year, but the first time it was 2 years ago, I think. He just looked like the Hulk when he was celebrating. He's also he did a good performance in Tour of Flanders once, but yeah, that's not the best race for him because it's also contains a lot of climbs. And he always had bad luck in Roubaix, but if he doesn't have bad luck there, yeah, that's he's also crazy fast after a tough race, so you don't want to sprint against him in the velodrome.
Yeah, I think for sure in Roubaix next year I'm not getting shocked if we see a UNOX rider in the not maybe beating Van der Poel, but maybe after that with I mean I can just wait to see Søren Wanskjold ride the Roubaix at the top shape. I think he will just ride crazy fast with all his weight and all his power on the cobblestone. I think he's just made for it. So him and Till and Christoph is that would be crazy.
Yeah, knowing how fast the Werenskiold is, if he goes head to head, for example, with Van der Poel in the velodrome, Van der Poel really isn't sure that he's going to win. Yeah, that's amazing to look forward to, I think. And you talked about Jonas. How do you pronounce his last name the correct way? Because it's very tough for me.
Widerberg, or you can say, I mean, Widerberg, Widerberg.
I have the feeling that he's a guy who, hasn't shown his true potential in at the with the pros yet. I have the feeling that there is a lot, how do I say, hidden in the guy, like that he's a hidden gem, a hidden gem.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I remember I think it was in Kuurne-Bussen-Kuurne in 2021. It was in the break, and then he followed when Van der Poel and some other guys came up to him, and then I think those guys were like caught maybe 4 or 5 km from the finish, but already there he was only
Narvaez.
20. Yeah, he was only like 22 years old, and he was so strong. So I think like when he will come home, he will start flying again.
Yeah, that would be if you look at all those names, if you can get it's even hard to get a one man roster out of it, to be honest. If you and if you get the eight best men in top shape, they can do crazy things. So that's but also like now UNOX for 2024 is set on all levels, climbing, sprints, TTs. It's not going to take long until UNOX is world tour.
Oh, I think the same. I mean, I trust the process, and of course, that's I've not signed the contract with them because I think, or because I know they are going to be World Tour in 2027. But of course, I believe in that, and I want to be a part of that. And yeah, I wouldn't have signed with the team if I didn't think we were going to, still be better and better every year.
A last question, which I was looking at your pro cycling stats obviously before the interview to prepare, and then I saw you raced a Grand Prix Cérami and the Lotto Femmes Ardennes Classic. What was the thought process behind that? Because that surprised me, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it was just to finish the season with some fun races. I mean, I get beside me, that was cobblestone and extremely hectic race in Belgium. That was not
I
made for
know,
me,
yeah.
but it was cool. I was in the front until last 3K, but then I had the puncture, so yeah, that's it. But of course, I had no chance there. But I just at that race, I just went full gas all the way. I attacked, attacked, attacked. It was a really cool race with the 1-2 category race. It's just like full gas and no break, just attacking all the time. And then Femmes Ardennes, it was another really cool race that was a bit more hilly, but still the climbs were pretty easy. But with 10k to go, I was sitting there and I saw to my side and it was Laporte, and then on the other side it was just another crazy guy. So yeah, I mean, it was cool to ride like classic races, because of course I can't compete in Flanders and those kind of races now, but maybe in 10 years I can have another body and then I can try that as well. So it's nice to like get experience and like see if, okay, is this fun, or is this like, is this too scary for me, or am I comfortable in the hectic situation? So yeah, that was pretty much the thought about that, and of course having fun. So yeah, that was cool.
That's also, yeah, I get that. Like, yeah, that those are the funnest, the most fun races, I think, those skirmish races. Yeah. But also for GC in the future, like the Tour Best stage in the Tour. Next year we have a gravel stage. The Giro also has a lot of gravel stages. Yeah, it's important to also ride races like Pamela Den and Grand Prix Cerami with the eye on doing a good GC, I think, because you need to be there every day.
Yeah, I mean, of course you can have, I mean, of course I have okay power numbers and it's been, I have to get better there. But at the same time, it's like, it's been riders in the past who have had amazing power numbers, but they haven't like been able to do the other things. That's also important. So yeah, you have to be a full package. And I mean, Vingegaard has shown that he is that, and Pogacar has shown that. So yeah, you have to be able to do everything, really.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for joining today. I'm really looking forward to your 2024 season, because if I look at the bad luck this year, if everything falls into place and you have a perfect winter, I really think that you're going to be competing with like top tens in high level stage races. So yeah, I'm going to follow you up very close.
Thanks a lot. It's been really nice.
I've got the sports, the